Please consider the worldwide outreach of issues, etc. When you think about your year-end giving, with 1 month left in 2016, we're approximately $78,000 short of expenses. You can make a secure online gift at issuesetc.org. You can also make a year-end tax-deductible donation by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for listening, and thanks for keeping us in mind at the end of the year. It really is remarkable and just almost unbelievable if you look at just the raw numbers of membership and attendance for certain denominations in North America. You see several that stand out from the rest, and they stand out for a reason. The reason they stand out for about the last 50 years is their precipitous decline in both membership and in attendance numbers. We sometimes call them the mainline Protestant denominations. Who are they? There's a new survey on congregations within those denominations, at least in Canada, that are bucking the decline trend and actually growing, and growing significantly. Terry Mattingly joins us to talk about this. We're going to be spending some time with him talking about a new survey on growing churches in mainline Protestantism. Terry is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He is author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's also founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here.
Just for a refresher, because it gets tossed around, I think, often left undefined, that term mainline Protestantism, how do you carefully define that?
Well, the sociologists have done it for us, but we can start with history. This is basically a term that was very important in the 20th century in terms of American public life. There were seven kind of historic Protestant denominations that came to be called the Seven Sisters of Mainline Protestantism. Just for a reminder, let's see if I can click them all off here at the same time. We're talking about what became the United Methodist Church, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, the Episcopal Church, the United Church of Christ, what became the Presbyterian Church USA, the American Baptist Church, and the Disciples of Christ. I think that's all seven of them. These were, of course, often referred to as the liberal Protestant churches, and in terms of doctrine and culture, that may not have been true, you know, in the beginning, but it certainly was true by the end of the 20th century. You have to point out in there, a lot of people will say the Presbyterians are in there, but of course they mean the Presbyterian Church USA. They don't mean the conservative Presbyterian Church in America. You'll hear people put Lutherans in there, but that, as you well know, oversimplifies the Lutheran scene. The Missouri Synod Lutherans, quite frankly, sociologically, have many characteristics of the Seven Sisters in the mainline Protestant world, and have in recent years had some similar problems with statistical decline, but they just don't fit theologically with the others. So that's the sociological and historical definition there.
The trend in either American or North American, here we're talking about Canadian, mainline Protestantism has generally been precipitous decline in the 30%, upwards of 30% in the last 50 years. Has that been adequately covered by the media?
Well, first of all, the trend is more like 50% in some of these denominations. When you look at the whole period from their peak in the 60s through the present day, and I think in previous conversations, I have gone kind of on record or out on a limb or whatever metaphor you want to use, I've said that I think the decline of the liberal Protestant mainline might be the single most undercovered story of the late 20th century, in large part because you can't explain the rise of the new mainline, which statistically would have to be evangelicalism, Pentecostalism, independent churches, the Southern Baptist Convention fits in there somewhere, that the new world in which the mainstream of American Protestant religion would have to be the evangelicals. You can't really get into that story unless you go back and say, well, what happened to the churches that were at the heart of American life statistically. You can't have the second story without telling the first, but the press hasn't really focused that much on the decline of the mainline, I think, frankly, in large part, because the social views of liberal mainline Protestantism so closely resemble the views of how the American press, or elite parts of the American press, I should stress, tend to view the world.
So what's the story that we're talking about today with regard to kind of the Canadian, our northern neighbors and their mainline Protestant wing?
Well, I think you have to start off by saying that folks have known for quite some time, ever since Kelly wrote the famous book, Why Conservative Churches Are Growing, in the 60s and 70s, we've known that conservative churches had better growth patterns than doctrinally progressive or liberal churches. So to some degree, there's nothing new here. But what everybody has really been kind of dancing around is the actual question of, does doctrine really have anything to do with it? Or is it more sociological? In the infamous words of the former presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church, Catherine Jeffords Shorey, she said, well, of course the Episcopal Church is declining. We are very pro-environment, which means we have small families. We're inclusive. We're diverse, which means we're driving off a lot of people who don't want to be inclusive and diverse, which is kind of like a backwards way of saying liberal churches are not growing because we're not doing the same doctrines as conservative churches. In fact, she kind of raised a lot of eyebrows by saying, of course we don't have many children. We're not Mormons or something. When seeing as how she was the former bishop of Utah, that kind of struck home. But this topic has been around for a long time. What's new is that a group of Canadian researchers led by two people in Ontario actually went out and tried to say, well, okay, are there any growing mainline churches in Canada? Now, this is not the United States, and they specifically went after four churches as they line up in Canada, the Anglican Church of Canada, the United Church, which is kind of an interesting body that blends several different religious traditions into one, Presbyterian and Evangelical Lutheran churches in Canada. They went to these denominations, asked them, what are your exceptional churches? What are your growing churches, your most successful churches, if statistics are used? They defined growth as 2% a year in attendance growth over a 10-year period of time, 2003 to 2013. And they defined decline as a 2% fall in attendance per year over that same 10-year period of time. Where I started my column this week for the Universal Syndicate was on the fact that when they went to the denominations and asked for churches that were growing, they were given lots of names, but when they investigated these churches, they found out to their surprise that these churches weren't growing at all, that in many cases these individual congregations were actually declining, although some of them may have had one or two good years in which they grew a little bit. But they thought it was fascinating that these were the churches their denomination thought of as successful. When the researchers began hunting around on their own by word of mouth and making individual contacts, they actually found 9 or 10 rapidly growing mainline churches in Canada, and then they decided to do a sociological study with questionnaires studying the clergy and the people who attend those growing churches and contrasted them with 13 churches that were in decline. And then out of that came their journal article, which is being released this month in a prominent journal, Sociological Journey in Canada. And the name of the article simply stated is Theology Matters.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about a new survey on growing churches in declining mainline Protestantism. We'll get into the numbers after this. Does the gospel free you to do what you want? I've written an article in the latest issues, etc. journal titled Better Than Good, Failed Attempts to Improve on the Gospel. You can read it by subscribing to the online Issues, Etc. journal. Just click the red subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. You can also read Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer's spiritual journey from Roman Catholicism and American Evangelicalism to Confessional Lutheranism, the free online Issues, Etc. journal.
Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois, engages young adults in a Christ-centered environment, delivering academic excellence and spiritual growth to develop Christian leaders for tomorrow. We provide a Christ-focused alternative to public high schools. Many of our students receive tuition assistance. To help us provide tuition assistance to more students, go to melhs.org and click on the giving page, or call me, Dr. J. Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Christians, young and old, are increasingly pressured to change their beliefs. That's why St. Jude said we need to contend for the faith once for all delivered to the saints. At the San Antonio Worldview Conference, Confessional Lutherans Jonathan Fisk, Jay Weber, Ryan McPherson, and Craig Parton will unmask the false, direct us to Christ and His Word, and defend the faith. The San Antonio Worldview Conference, Saturday, February the 11th, San Antonio, Texas. Visit worldusa.org. worldusa.org.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. on this Wednesday afternoon, December the 7th. We're talking about a new survey on growing congregations inside declining mainline Protestant denominations. Terry Mattingly of GetReligion.org is our guest. Terry, let's get to the numbers. What stood out to you in this latest survey of Canadian mainline Protestant churches as they compared and contrasted mainline Protestant growing congregations with the more typically shrinking congregations?
Well, there's several things here to think about. If you put it in broad strokes, as newspapers, of course, tend to do, justifiably so, the big headline here is that small O Orthodox parishes are growing, and typically doctrinaire liberal parishes are in decline. The thing that I thought was fascinating and much more concrete, because frankly, I was impressed most by the questions with clergy, because there you're dealing with a very set number of people and you're asking them highly specific questions. I thought it was fascinating that in growing churches, the pastors tend to be more conservative theologically than the people in the pews. But in declining churches, the pastors in the pulpits are more doctrinally liberal than the people in their pews. Isn't that fascinating?
It is.
And their thesis here is basically the congregation tends to get pulled in the theological direction of the pastor. So you look at that broad stroke, and that was really interesting. They also found that you may not want to hear this, they also found that the growing churches tend to have contemporary worship styles. And I immediately followed up on that, and they said this was a part of their study that they really would have to go back in and study more. They also thought it would be interesting to study Catholic churches, where anecdotally over the years I've read a lot of studies that indicate the growing churches tend to be much more traditional in their approach to worship, whereas the declining churches tend to be kind of pop Catholicism-oriented. That's another broad stroke. Now, inside these bigger picture items, one more. They found that the growing churches, this is no surprise, were younger. Two-thirds of their attendees were under the age of 60, whereas the declining churches, two-thirds of the people in the pews were over the age of 60. And they also, and one of the writers specifically cited this as something they wanted to follow up on. It seemed that the growing churches were much more friendly to large families and simply had many more children in them than the declining churches. So there's all the broad stroke stuff. Where it gets really interesting is when you get down into the individual questions they ask. And there, you're not going to be at all surprised, or at least I wasn't surprised. They ended up focusing on some of the very questions that you and I have discussed for years that Get Religion writes about that we often refer to as the TMAT trio. The questions I have always asked religious leaders in a Christian context as a way of trying to kind of probe the fault lines within denominations, which is exactly what these men were doing, these researchers were doing. They were probing doctrinal and religious practice fault lines inside these liberal mainline churches in Canada. The TMAT trio questions, you may recall, number one is, did the resurrection actually happen? Number two is salvation through Christ alone. And the third one, very topical for the decades we live in, the third one is sex outside of marriage a sin? Not illegal, not the worst sin or whatever, but just simply stated as sin. Now, the resurrection question and the salvation question are right at the heart of their study and yielded some of the most interesting statistics out of this thing.
What specifically did they find there?
In growing churches, the clergy affirmed a very conservative view of the resurrection. Jesus rose from the dead, empty tomb, bodily resurrection, flesh and blood resurrection, a very strong literal definition of the resurrection. They found that 93% of the conservative church clergy affirmed that, while only 56% of the clergy in declining churches agreed on that resurrection question. When you get into the, you get an even stronger answer. I guess it's hard even for progressives to kind of mix words when it comes to the resurrection. They ask the question, do you affirm that only those who believe in and follow Jesus Christ will receive eternal life? In other words, this is basically a universalism question. Are all religions the same? And 46% of clergy in growing churches strongly affirmed that statement, and 31% moderately affirmed that. So you've got like, you know, do the math, you've got like 77% of the clergy in the growing churches actively rejected universalism. Now, this is where you get a really strong statistic. You want to take a guess at what percentage of the pastors in the declining churches affirmed that statement strongly?
It's got to be at least single digits, Terry.
Yeah, it's a round single digit. It's zero. Zero pastors in the declining churches affirmed that statement, and only 6% moderately agreed with it. Which means that out of those pastors, you had a single digit who to any degree or another rejected universalism, which then leads naturally to the whole subject of evangelism. I mean, if you don't believe that there are eternal consequences in faith in Jesus Christ, what then is your definition of evangelism and church growth? And that's another area that they would like to follow up on more, because they got lots of different answers from the declining church pastors and people in the pews, but over and over they kept hearing that the essence of the gospel is social justice. But what people meant when they said social justice would go all over the place. It was clear that in some churches this was primarily economic justice. In others, clearly it was primarily LGBT was the heart of their concept of social justice, was gay rights. Racism, in some cases, fit the bill. But the when you ask the conservative pastors in the growing churches, what's the essence of your ministry? All of them, 100%, said, we are affirming that our primary goal is to encourage non-Christians to become Christians. 100% of the clergy said that, and the growing churches said it's crucial to encourage non-Christians to become Christians, and 50% of pastors in declining churches said that.
This is a theological gap, isn't it?
Well, they're in the same denominations, but it's very clear that they are not interpreting the theological traditions of those churches in the same way. The resurrection is just about as basic as it gets. At least that's what the Apostle Paul said when it comes to drawing a line to determine kind of the essence of the Christian faith and who's a Christian and who isn't. But it also showed up in other areas where I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it was something like 17% of the pastors in the declining churches read the Bible every day, and it was like 100% in the growing churches. There was a fascinating number down in there about the concept of the supernatural. In declining churches, 44% of pastors said that God performs miracles in answer to prayer. And in the growing churches, 100% affirmed that statement. So you've got two very radically different approaches to the Christian faith, but here's the key, within the same denominations. And this takes me back to the book that probably has influenced me more than any other over the last quarter century or so, and that would be James Davison Hunter's famous book, Culture Wars, The Struggle to Define America. And in that book, when you actually look at what he meant when he used the term culture war, as opposed to what it means when it shows up in the New York Times or on the evening news, you know, on CNN, he defined culture wars as based on the concept that America now had two essential religious points of view, and that these points of views were no longer separated by denominational histories or even proclaimed doctrines. He divided the world of American religion into two groups, the camp of the Orthodox with a small o, and the camp of the progressives. And the Orthodox, whether they were Jewish, Catholic, Protestant, you know, whatever, the Orthodox said there is such a thing as transcendent, revealed, eternal truth. There are absolute truths. And the progressives, whether they were Jewish, Catholic, Protestant, or whatever, the progressives all said that truth was evolving and highly based on human experience. And that's the division, it would appear to me, that we have again in this study from Canada between a more doctrinaire, small-o orthodox approach to Christianity and kind of an evolving, experiential, personal, progressive form of the faith.
You had mentioned before you thought that the decline of mainline Protestant church bodies, generally speaking, is the most underreported story, a religion story in the media, and that you can't really explain the rise of the new mainline without talking first about that. At the first point there, why do you think it is that the media have failed to cover this story? And can I proffer a speculation, which would be that these church bodies have generally been political allies of the political bent of the media?
Yeah, well, that's what I said that earlier in slightly different words. I think it's safe to say that. I also think it's safe to say that you have to remember when the decline really began. The statistical peak for the main line came in the 50s and 60s, and what happens in the 60s? Basically, all heck fire breaks loose in the 60s, symbolized primarily in the world of religion in America as churches debating the Vietnam War was a big thing, but much more we have the beginning of the sexual revolution. And you have a lot of changing roles related to women, marriage, family, etc. And all of that happened right when you had the baby boomers were children in the homes of the greatest generation, the World War II generation. And with the baby boomers being the largest generation up until the millennials, essentially the liberal mainline Protestant church defined itself as the church of social progressivism, right while it had this massive cohort in their pews. And to some degree, as their decline began and the evangelical decline really began, you began to see the Jesus people on the front cover of Time magazine, and who are the evangelicals, and Jimmy Carter shows up, in 76, and you have all of the reporters trying to figure out what the word evangelicalism means. These two prominent groups basically trade places in the 70s, and then for sure into the 80s. And we had massive social change in the United States. There's just no way around it. Now, to be fair, we should note that where we are now is someplace different, to where now even the conservative churches are struggling with kind of the secularization of our culture and the rise of the religiously unaffiliated, and the fact that the children of the baby boomers, the so-called millennials, are turning out to be the very essence of that emerging phrase, they're spiritual but not religious, or they are even willing to proclaim themselves completely religiously unaffiliated. So the boomers, the churches are having their own problems with the boomers and the children of the boomers. But right now, you still would have to say that conservative churches are growing to some degree, or they're at least holding their own. This would certainly be true of Pentecostal churches, Latino and African American churches. They're holding their own while the liberal churches continue in what can only be called a demographic death dive at this point, where you have seminaries closing all over the place, you have cathedrals closing. This is a really great time to buy yourself an empty mainline Protestant church building, unless, of course, you're a Catholic church or an Orthodox church. You'll usually find they won't sell it to you because they don't want conservative groups to inherit their sanctuaries, which, frankly, as an Orthodox Christian, I think is rather sad.
You can only decline for so long before you either wink out of existence, or it's just the financial realities kick in. With about a minute here, you've been watching this for a long time. Where do you think it's headed with regard to mainline Protestantism, and what about those congregations that are growing among them?
In the U.S., different trends are emerging in different denominations. The Methodist Church, for example, is still very much up for grabs, in large part because of huge growth in the branches of the church that are overseas. The United Church of Christ is all but gone. The Disciples are fading. The American Baptists are fading. The ELCA and the PCUSA Presbyterians have openly now proclaimed themselves on the left, and the same goes for the Episcopal Church. We'll have to see how they fare. Some of these churches are better endowed financially than others. I've heard wits say that the Episcopal Church doors will be open even after there's nobody there except the people on the payroll at the altars, because they have endowments and they can sit on those endowments for some time. But the trends are not good, and there's no painless way to cut a shrinking pie.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Glad to be here.
In Hour 2 of Issues, Etc., we're going to be talking doctrine and practice with Pastor Larry Peters on this Wednesday afternoon, December the 7th. It is true that doctrine changes practice. It's also true that practice changes doctrine. We'll be right back.
Daily exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.